is definitely an interesting experiment of theatre verite, actors playing themselves in a planned production of Shakespeare's Comedy Errors. You know, really focuses on some interesting aspects of identity. Can you tell us what was it that sparked the idea of this play?
Well, originally, Ian and I had gone to school together, and we'd met when we were very young, we were 12. The headmaster at our school had said to Ian, this is the new boy. I want you to look out for him because his father has just committed suicide. And that was something that had happened in my life. And so Ian, much to his credit, was, as a 12-year-old, put in this position where he had to basically look after this kid who he'd never met, who had been through some kind of emotional drama. And so we became friends, and we started doing plays at school, and we became obsessed. We just loved, I mean, Ian did, you know, Ian was into footy and sport, and I was into other things, but we had this shared love of theatre, and we did heaps and heaps of plays at school together. And then after school, lives took radically different paths, and we hadn't seen each other for a long time, and then we ran into each other one day in the city in Collins Street in Melbourne, and we were just so excited to see each other. And, you know, we started doing bits out of the plays that we'd done at school that we still remembered, and we started talking, and we made all these plans to do all these things together, and then we didn't see each other literally from that day for another 13 years.
Yeah, I found Fleety very hard to find over the years. But the connection and the reason this play is called The Twins is we both played the Antipholus twins in Comedy of Errors. And more recently, over the last 5 years, we actually had this really silly idea of coming back together and doing Comedy of Errors as a two-hander. And we were very serious about it, but then we got distracted and we actually started talking about our lives and about friendship and about loss and addiction.
And parents and addiction and
privilege. And we were suddenly having these conversations that we both realized we hadn't had with any other men before. And it was so honest and so raw. And it actually felt very cathartic. And before we knew it, we started writing down our conversations, and then a little while later we thought, well, maybe this is a more interesting play than reworking Shakespeare's Comedy of Errors.
And it truly was. It went from the idea of us doing a two-hander version of Comedy of Errors to something way more interesting and way more confronting, and the audience's reactions to it have been absolutely astounding. I'm not big noting myself, but I've worked in the performing arts for the best part of 40 years, and I've never had a reaction to anything that I've done. And I've worked internationally. The reaction we've had to this play has been absolutely astounding. And I think it is that, you know, we're addressing all those things, you know, the shadows that parents cast on children, and then us as parents, and, you know, we carrying the sins of our parents onto our own children, and the idea of addiction, the idea of privilege, and especially at this time in our history, you know, the idea of privilege and what that means, and all sorts of things have come up. And you know, we were worried that people would go, oh God, two old white guys talking about themselves. But what we've had is people going, we've never seen two men talking so honestly about their feelings and doing so in such a meaningful way. And it's been incredibly satisfying and heartwarming for us to do this. And the reaction, as I said, from people has been absolutely astounding.
That's not what I found was really interesting, is that aspect of male friendship, male relationships. You know, it's not something that on a lot of stages or screens, you know, there's a lot of buddy cop films and quirky comedies, but it's really an area that's not really confronted head on very often.
I think that's right. Generally, it is about male power and type A personalities not showing their vulnerabilities. And we felt we're going to do this. We have to show all of our, you know, vulnerabilities and weaknesses and expose our underbelly. And it's a 90-minute two-hander, and we come off the stage feeling actually quite drained. I mean, we're reliving these conversations, and it's, you know, conflict. Of course, all friendships, it's not a one-way thing, but you have these incredible highs, but you also have these moments of great conflict. I think that's the strength of a true friendship. No conversation's too hard to have, and that's what Fleety and I have been having, and it actually is quite draining reliving some of these really difficult conversations.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about that. Like, normally when you do theatre, it's the mask of the performer, but in this you're actually sort of ripping away that. And that's a real challenge, actually reveal parts of your actual self to the audience.
That's exactly what we're doing, and it's all completely true. That's the other thing, is none of it is actually fantasy. It's reality. And the conversations that we had while we were putting this piece together, some of them were so confronting. And, you know, because we realized that to get to the place we wanted to get to, we had to be completely honest with each other. And some of those conversations were very difficult about loss and about trust and about dishonesty and about failings. And it's not a depressing piece by any means, but I think a lot of people, probably because I'm in it, you know, come along thinking it's going to be some kind of comedy. And there is certainly hilarious moments in it, and there are great moments where the audience is laughing, you know, really deeply, but then within about 20 seconds they're crying. There are huge chunks in this that actually make people weep. It's an honor to have this kind of emotional impact on an audience.
I think one of the great things, Fleety, we've found is just hearing the conversations after the production. And I'm not sure, Stephen, how long it stuck with you, but we're finding it does stick with people. And as a documentary filmmaker, the thing which I really want is for people to be thinking and acting and talking about the film. So when I did The Final Quarter about Adam Goods, conversations went on. And it's really surprised me with the twins that those conversations are really being had, you know, with people in the foyer on the way home, that I've had so many notes of people saying, I woke up with this play. And, you know, whether someone thinks it's a good piece of theatre or not, that's far more secondary to me. It's actually whether it stays with them, because theatre is all about telling a story and trying to shift and move and make us as a society a better and more considered and more, hopefully, more compassionate society.
Well, one thing I've got to say is, you know, as a performer, you know, some of the people that Ian knew that I didn't actually know as individuals, and I've now met and hopefully we'll get to call friends. But some of the performers that have come and seen this play and talked to us about it as fellow performers are people that I've only ever just, you know, worshipped. People like Hugo Weaving or Brian Brown, these performers that to me are almost like gods, have come and cornered us and talked about how deeply affected they were by it and how incredibly moving they found the whole thing. And it's such an honour to hear that from those people. You know, people like Robin Nevin, and, you know, it's just been, for me, it's an absolute joy to, you know, to have these sort of people loving our work.
I saw the production on the Tuesday night, and I was thinking the same thing about, I've got to go catch my old school friends. Like, I was thinking, I can't just keep sending joke SMSs about Peter Dutton, which is, you know, make a short little, short little laugh. I've got to actually go and spend time with friends down the South Coast that I haven't seen for, you know.
That's a great thing, and that's another thing we've had, you know, a lot of people say is that, you know, it's made them want to catch up with people, you know, in their lives, and people that, you know, that they were really, really close to, that they've let that relationship slide, or that, you know, that I'm always like, oh, yeah, we'll catch up, and you know, not doing it, and that's what Ian and I did, you know. But then eventually we did catch up, and we made sure we didn't let it go.
I think also, Stephen, it's a really important point you made, that, you know, during COVID there's been so much loneliness out there, and you know, I think this is an opportunity as we're coming out of it to actually say, no, I'm not going to let it slip this time. You know, I think even just seeing people back in the theatre together, it was just so fantastic to see us there, you know, with people in this shared community. And we're yearning to come together and share stories. But I think we've got to work a little harder with all our friends as well, because, as I say, yeah, there's a lot of pain and a lot of loneliness, and we've just got to make sure we're keeping an eye out for everyone.
Yes.
Also, there's a lot about, like, what is a successful life, and, you know, how we all sort of get pigeonholed. So we get pigeonholed as an artist, or early in your career, and as a merchant banker, and then moving into documentary maker. It's interesting how we sort of get defined so easily, and we sort of ignore the sort of complexity of how we actually are as human beings.
Yeah. And there's, you know, there's a lot more to anyone than their job description, you know. And one of the things we talk about a lot in the play is labels, and the labels that we give to other people and to ourselves, and how there's a lot more to a person than their label, you know, than their job description.
Sorry,
I was just going to talk about the risk, like taking the risk in life. Like, do you go for that job? You know, I mean, you know, the entertainment industry is just such a competitive and ferocious thing, with only a few people succeed in actually getting sustainable work. So that whole, I mean, you talk a lot about, you know, going to NIDA, or Greg going to NIDA, and, well, actually getting kicked out eventually, and yourself thinking about, you know, I could have taken that path. But it is just how we all sort of meet, we all kind of find our ways to sort of get our aspirations into a different sort of...
Well, now that I'm friends with Hugo Weaving and Brian Brown, I don't need to worry about this stuff anymore.
but I think that's right, you know, we all have so many regrets. And I think that's one of the things which, when I was thinking back why didn't I meet Greg there? We both had planned to go to NIDA and audition on the same day. And I got there, but I walked straight out. And I was too afraid to tell my father that I wanted to be an actor. And my father's no longer alive. It just wouldn't have been that difficult for him to say, actually, I'd like to go and audition and let's see what happens and explain to him. Because he never once in his life said, you can't be an actor. But I had this thing in my imagination that he would be furious and I'd let him down. But I just never had the courage to, A, go and audition. So I let Fleety down, but I let myself down because I just didn't have that honest conversation. And I think now's the time to be, again, having all these honest conversations with ourselves at any age.
Absolutely. Yeah. And with, you know, and with parents and children and, you know, with our parents and with our children, you know, like it's very important to, you know, to have these honest conversations. I so often think all these terrible things are going to happen. And when we actually do it, we find it's actually really simple and that people are actually really happy for us, you know, not angry and not disappointed. You know, it's an amazing, life is an amazing thing.
At a similar level, Stephen, as we revealed, I had no intention of going back onto the stage. This was something we were doing, which was the pure joy of getting together as old friends and writing and workshopping. And we thought it would be a great play, one night only at the Upper River Hall in Kangaroo Valley, because we wrote it over, you know, many weeks over the course of 2019 when the fires eventually came. And in the middle of last year, Fleety suddenly said, why don't we take this to the Adelaide Fringe? It was the most confronting thing. I said, what? You know, and then I had to face all my fears again about going on stage. I mean, we've just done a five-week season in Adelaide. And I could say, oh, I don't know what all the fuss was about. But I absolutely do. It was terrifying. Every night around 4 o'clock, I just get this wave of anxiety. But, you know, and it's only been enhanced by coming and doing it at the Seymour Centre.
You know, one of the great things about having done that season in Adelaide was it gave us an insight into how people felt about the work. And, you know, very gratefully, we won an award, which was an award for bringing awareness to mental health. We didn't expect that to come at all, and you know, absolutely honoured that we got that. You know?
You also look interesting back at sort of the Geelong grammar of how, and it's interesting sort of look at sort of white privilege and class, of how you can end up living in the wrong side or the right side of tracks, and how these kind of things actually have a really important connection to people of, you know, how they grew up and how they were sort of perceived as they grew up.
Absolutely. Yeah, and privilege is a difficult thing to talk about. And we thought in this, let's just put it all out there. And, you know, there's nothing to hide. And what we're trying to do in the play is find the connection points. And I think that's what we've got to do everywhere, is find the points of connection, not alienate people, you know, rich or poor or whatever. And we're doing it, hopefully, in a way that's just, again, showing the vulnerabilities rather than using privilege as a place of power. It's actually, we're trying to expose it as a place of connection.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if anything, you know, I think it is more a point of connection, but if anything, it's certainly not being seen as a point of power. If anything, I think we're talking about the privilege that we had almost being a weakness.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So can we expect to see either you two working together again after this play? You thought there.
Well, Ian doesn't think so, but I've got my secret plans. You know.
Yeah. But, well, I think we've always just had such an incredible creative connection. It's been an absolute joy being on stage with Fleety every night, and I think at the moment I'm just purely focused on the fact that I've got to get up on stage next Tuesday night, and that we're there till the 17th, and then we're going to Kangaroo Valley in Canberra and Melbourne. So I can't think beyond that. I think Fleety can think much more big picture than I can. He's much more comfortable on stage, but I can only think about the joy of getting on stage with him next Tuesday.
What's it like performing, like when you're going to go to Kangaroo Valley and you're probably going to perform people that, you know, know you very well? Is it different to when you, you know, most of the audience, you know, probably 90% or 95% of them you don't know, but when they're your friends or your acquaintances from a long period of time, what's that experience like to perform in front of people that know you very well?
I think maybe you do put a bit more pressure on yourself, but I think when my daughters came, that was a very emotional one. Fleety, you might like to talk about, you know, when your daughter came as well, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a scene in the play where I talk, and I talk about my father, and then I talk about how my failings as a father myself, and, you know, and how I could have done things differently, and how, you know, hopefully from now on I will, you know, be doing things differently. But it's a very emotional scene for me to do. And when my daughter came to see it. Weirdly, it was the same night that Ian's daughters came to see it as well. So, you know, we both had this very heavy feeling, but gratefully, you know, all of our daughters absolutely loved it. My daughter said it was the best thing she'd ever seen. So I was absolutely, you know, I was very moved and very happy by that, because I didn't want her to feel uncomfortable about it, and I didn't want her to feel that she was being exploited. She really took it for what it was, and, you know, she was really happy about it. But I think for Ian, it's probably been a bit more difficult, because in Sydney, you know, Ian has a lot of connections in all sorts of worlds, in the filmmaking world, in the business world, in the art world, in the theatre world. And so a lot of the people that have been coming are people that know Ian, whereas I'm quite used to, you know, audiences coming that maybe they know me, but I don't know them, you know. They might know me as a performer, but Ian's actually had to deal with people that he knows as individuals. And, you know, when you're friends with people like Brian Brown and Rachel Ward and people, and they come and see you suddenly, you know, there's Ian Darling. Oh, yeah, I think I'm going to be an actor now. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure in that, I think. And fortunately, you know, they really appreciated what he did, and they really enjoyed it.
I think the other thing which was interesting is all our daughters learned a great deal about us. And I think that's perhaps where the honesty is, you know, I guess over the course of it, we discovered a lot about ourselves in it, which we hadn't yet revealed until we went on stage. And I think the process was really interesting, that we had a co-writer, Sarah Butler, who was a really great influence on us, that she sort of kept us honest and kept us going back and drilling down into what it was, why we were feeling this. If it was just Fleety and I, we mightn't have gone that extra layer. And I think that was important. And then Sarah and Terry Serio is directing, and Sarah was the co-director as well. What they did is they were really brutal on us about the way we played ourselves. And especially me, because I haven't got the same skills as Fleety. But they wanted a real honesty. And in many ways, I found, even at school, playing Shakespearean characters or whatever, so much easier than actually playing yourself. It's so difficult to reflect that truth on stage. And they just had to work and work and work to get us just back to having a conversation like we're having now. And I found that really challenging. I don't know how you felt, Fleety.
Absolutely. And also, you know, you tend to get defensive, you know, when someone tells you, you know, you're not being you properly. You know, you're not being you enough. And you go, shut up, I know me. I'm there. You know, but it was really has been... And we really needed those outside eyes. I think if it had just been Ian and I doing it, we wouldn't have been able to see a lot of the stuff that, you know, from the outside going, no, you need to do this and you need to explore that. What I've loved more than anything is the reactions from people just saying, you know, this is, it's so honest, and it's, you know, it's made me think about my own life and the way I treat my friends and the way I've treated my family. And
it's interesting also in terms of finding character. A number of people have said that we should do a version where we play each other. And then a number have said, well, you know, it's going to be great to see this when it's played by other actors. And we both looked at each other and we're going, no, we're not letting this out. Anyway, that'll be another layer of courage. It'd just be hard enough playing yourself, but seeing someone else playing me, it'd just, I think I'd sneak out. It'd be dreadful.